Andy, my dude, have you heard of the magical website builder known as Squarespace?
Ugh, not another Squarespace ad. I feel like every podcast is sponsored by them.
Hey, don't knock it until you try it. Yes, okay, it is overhyped, but actually it lives up to the hype. Squarespace is like a website fairy godmother. With a click of a button, your site transforms into a beautiful masterpiece.
A website fairy godmother? That sounds interesting. What makes it so magical?
Well, for starters, those slick templates make anyone look like a professional web designer. Pick one, customize the colors and fonts to match your brand, and voila. Plus, the drag-and-drop fluid engine is so easy, your grandma could build a site on Squarespace.
Well, she did knit me a lovely scarf last Christmas. Maybe website design is next.
Exactly. And when you're ready to sell your Nana's handmade scarves online, Squarespace has built-in e-commerce. Add a store with one click, get flexible payment options, then watch those sales roll in. And when she wants to teach others her steezy scarf skills, Squarespace's new courses feature is just the ticket. Nana can set up her curriculum and enrollments and payments in a snap and become the next e-knitting influencer.
Ugh, wow, you really sold me with the grandma angle. Sign me up for that free trial.
Just go to thenextreel.com/Squarespace and transform your site into a beautiful Squarespace masterpiece.
Well, thanks, Pete. Even though it's overhyped, Squarespace actually sounds perfect for Nana's site's needs. Appreciate the warning on the ads, though. I'll brace myself next time I listen to a podcast.
Anytime. Let me know if you need any help getting that site up and running. Andy, can you believe we've almost hit 700 episodes of The Next Reel?
I know, it's crazy. And with all the other episodes in our family of podcasts, we are well over 1,200 episodes of movie conversation. It's really pretty amazing that we've gotten to have these in-depth movie chats every week for over a decade now.
And we couldn't have done it without our loyal community of film fans. Their support over the years has meant so much.
For sure. That reminds me, we should give the merch store a shout out. Buying shirts from thenextreel.com/merch is a great way listeners can continue to support the show. Plus, they get to sport our great designs.
Absolutely. I think sometimes folks forget we have a variety of shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more available. In fact, a great place to start is with a shirt sporting the Next Reel's logo.
We also have that classic Fast Times Spicoli Surf School tee, or the weirdly popular Rusty's European Tour shirt.
The one from National Lampoon's European Vacation. Why is that so popular?
Search me, but we have sold a ridiculous number of those. I guess there are a lot of Rusty's taking trips to Europe?
We're always adding new designs based on movies we've covered, like our brand new design for A Streetcar Named Desire, featuring a streetcar named Desire. So if you want to rep your love of TNR and films, head to thenextreel.com/merch.
Every purchase helps us continue to have these weekly in-depth conversations. So visit thenextreel.com/merch today.
And as always, thanks for listening and being a part of the Next Reel community. We've got lots more great movie chats coming your way.
In the untamed wilderness of our world, there are environments that reject human intrusion and unleash unimaginable terrors upon those who dare to venture into their domains. In the realm of horror cinema, these hostile environments become more than just settings. They transform into living, breathing entities that test the limits of human survival. From the claustrophobic depths of the uncharted cave system to the primordial forests that conceal a malevolent presence, these films showcase the power of nature to become a source of terror. The vast expanse of the ocean becomes a prison where a lone surfer must face off against a great white shark, and the dizzying heights of a 2,000-foot television tower serve as an impressively on-the-nose metaphor for the character's emotional isolation and the fragility of human life. So join us as we explore this month's films and the ways in which their environments become sources of terror, tapping into the prime fears that lurk within the human psyche. Let us venture into the unforgiving environments of horror cinema, where the true nature of survival is laid bare. This month, on Sitting in the Dark.
Welcome to Sitting in the Dark. I'm Pete Wright, and this week it's my turn at the front of the class with a set of films that scare me because the environments themselves are wholly terrible and should not be explored by humanity at all ever, in a case I like to call You Don't Belong Here, Human. Joining me this week on this swim, hike, and climb-a-thon are my partners in petrification, Tommy Metz III and Kyle Olson. Hello, boys.
Huzzah.
Huzzah as well.
Okay. And our newest horror hooligan straight from the Exorcist Minute podcast on True Story FM and secondarily his classroom at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, where he's been teaching at UNLV Film since 2008. Keenan Diaz. Welcome to our ranks.
Thanks for having
Yay,
me.
Keenan! Thank you for joining us.
Go Running Rebels. Thanks for letting me represent.
We are really excited to have you here, and what a great week to start. Let me just start with a, and we're not, I don't want to talk about the movies yet. Mm-hmm. No specifics about the movies. Mm-hmm. But let's go around the horn and talk about the nature of my thesis this week, that sometimes the horror can be just in the environments. And you will note, I did climbing underwater, climbing at fall, mm-hmm. climbing, or we did Don't Go Into the Woods, and we did Don't Swim Anymore. How did the environmental horror kind of films work for you? Kyle, you want to go first?
Sure. I'd seen two of the movies beforehand. Mm-hmm. And then when you put the four together, it wasn't until the last one that I was sort of like, oh, now I get what you're doing.
So I
see how they thematically worked all together. And yeah, that is one of the things I really, really liked about it is that, nature red in tooth and claw, like, you know, there's Mother Nature, do not mess with her. And we see that action, but not so, but still has that nice horror element too, where we don't get as far until as like grizzly or orca or any of that kind of stuff, which is its own sort of conversation. This one, it's really just the in human nature of nature that we sort of got into. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, I love that you said that. I'm exuberant that you had a good time with this theme. Mm-hmm.
What I liked so much about your choices was the restraint in your choices that you didn't pick. When you originally said You Don't Belong Here, I was like, oh, we're going to space and we're going to James Cameron's The Ocean.
Yeah. Oh.
Those are not readily available for normal people to go to. All four of these are things that people should not, but definitely can do to a certain extent. You know what I mean? So we're not at the ultra deep. We're not at the ultra high or anything like that. Gravity is not the issue as much. Well, in one of the movies, gravity is kind of a villain. I really liked that. That narrowed it to more of an obtainable and then why you shouldn't do that situation. So
excellent.
good picks.
Oh, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Keenan? Yeah, I agree. Unlike Kyle, it didn't take me till the fourth movie. I'd seen The Descent, and then I put on the first 10 minutes of The Ritual. I was like, Pete is really onto something here, actually, mm-hmm. as a subgenre, which I don't know if has been named. But yeah, this idea of like, you are meant to stay within the bounds of your life, human. Right. Yeah. And outside there are forces beyond your control that civilization or a path or a fence have kept you out of. And thank God for that, normally.
With the added bonus of potentially you need this big, blunt thing mm-hmm. to break you out of whatever spiral, regret, give you redemption, whatever mm-hmm. it is that you
need.
Right. Did you know that, Pete, going into it, that all of the movies you were going to pick are about grief in some way? Is that part of the environmental horror genre as you've defined it?
Well, I'll be honest, Keenan, it seems like every horror movie in some way, shape, or form is dealing with processing grief or regret. So to say no, I had no idea would be disingenuous. That they would be such obvious redemption, like mm-hmm. grief redemption stories is the surprise part, right? Mm-hmm. I thought that was fascinating. So let me just run through the movies and a brief synopsis, and then we can do our new segment, one I'm very excited about. The first is The Descent, 2005's Neil Marshall directed film. A group of women goes on a regrettable caving expedition only to find themselves trapped and hunted by small spaces and subterranean creatures. Second is The Shallows from 2016, director Haume Colette Serra. A woman on a regrettable solo surf trip finds herself stranded on a rock formation stalked by a great white shark. Might be Michael Caine's great white shark. Don't know. The Ritual is 2017 a film from director David Bruckner. A group of friends embarks on a regrettable hiking trip in a remote Swedish forest where they encounter a malevolent entity with hooves and Face Arms. And then Fall from 2022, director Scott Mann. Two friends regrettably climb a regrettable 2,000-foot radio tower, regrettably, only to find themselves regrettably stranded at the regrettable top with no way down. I think I summed it up. Okay. And those are our four films. And there are, I have no true classics in there. A lot of times we try to go through the decades. These are all in the 2000s. So they all have kind of a certain vibe to them. Only one of them, I think, was made on a dare. To hear Neil Marshall talk about it, he said, you know, when is a Brit going to make a proper scary movie? And he took that as a dare to actually make that movie. That brings us to our new segment, which I like to call Axes to Grind. That's actually credit to Kyle for the title of that segment. This is the deal. Not all films work for all people, right? Films, total matter of taste. We get that. And this show is not a review show, but that doesn't mean some of these films don't give us reason to complain. So in this new segment on the show, I would like to open the floor to the things we just don't like about the films this week so that we can get it out of the way and get down to the real business of discussing what does work to make these movies actually scary.
Tom. Point of order. Is it possible to maybe do it, open it up to a 2-minute segment in front of each film and not do it all at once here?
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what? I think that's a good idea. Do we have a quorum?
Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay. Outstanding. So let us begin with the it seems almost sacrilegious to start with this film.
Which one? I still don't know which one you're so... Yeah.
I'm going in order of release. So okay. Starting with The Descent is it's an easy one and a complicated one because the film is, for me, so good and so scary. Mm-hmm. This movie epitomizes the theme this week because I don't love small spaces. I don't love caves. I don't love small spaces in caves. Any of the crawling through holes thing I am petrified of this movie, like hands over eyes petrified of this movie before we even meet the creatures. Let us talk about Axes to Grind. Do we have any axes to grind with The Descent?
I have none. Although, except that it makes me, it's one of those movies that makes me nervous to keep my eyes open because any misstep can lead to a fall, can lead to a really hard thing hitting a part of you that isn't hard enough to withstand it. So, but I mean, it does it incredibly well. And the fact, I mean, the caves are incredibly realistic. No, I have no axes to grind was my short answer.
Okay. Well, when I had seen this in the theaters when it first came out, I was really in love with this movie and, you know, this cave idea and then going through there. And it's frightening just seeing these women crawl into spaces that you're like, that's impossible that they could crawl through that. And somehow they do. And they keep going. And then the little golems show up, which is not in any of the marketing and not in any of the posters or anything. And I was like, oh, man, little golem things. So obviously I am wrong. This movie's become a classic and people love the creature designs here. But that has always thrown me for a loop because I'm so in love with the beginning without any of these little blah, 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 blah guys, right? I don't need any more little guys like the golem in my life. So I don't need them in my movies either.
So is it kind of like From Dusk Till Dawn? Like when the movie makes a huge turn, you're like, either you're with it oh, shoot. Because I was never with the turn from Dusk Till Dawn. I've learned to respect it a little bit more, but I was enjoying the gangster tale so much. And then they're like... They're all vampires. And I was like, oh, well, shoot. That sucks.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the other movie better.
Right. I respect it. That's a good way of putting it. I understand that's some people's favorite part of it, but just the basic element of them being in this cave system and getting wet and being lost and doing that because of grief, that works enough for me without adding, admittedly, really good creatures. If this were a creature movie through and through, it'd be like, these are excellent designs. These are excellent creatures. They scare the crap out of me. But do we really need four or five different types of being scared? I don't know.
That's an interesting point because this movie had the chance to be much more just like Fall in the way that the real problem is inability for escape, inability to is deprivation. That's like one of the things that three of these four movies have, is you are in an inhospitable situation. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind seeing a version of this movie without monsters that can crawl on the floor and use echolocation.
I really want to give Kyle the floor because I think I actually know what his axe is going to be. But I want to add for all of you to respond to one of the things that Marshall had said, is that in an early cut of the movie, he actually put a crawler in the hospital, which would have, because there was always this idea that maybe they're not real, that maybe they've gone crazy and they're killing each other, and that they're just this is the way they're processing. And they got rid of that cut. And I wonder what you think about introducing the Gollum creatures early as a figment of pulling away her sanity. So we could talk about that later if you want, but I do think it's an interesting angle.
Ugh, I like that idea so much less. But
okay, all right, good to know.
Yeah, I got a lot of love for this movie. It's one of my top 10, and we're getting into what I love, that I think is great about it. Watching it again, there's a little bit of House of Horrors about it, of like, now I'm popping out from the ceiling, now I'm popping out from the ground, like a little bit of that, where I'm like, okay, like it's scary enough. Like, you don't also have to be like, wow, it's me again. Like,
yeah,
like, okay, I get it. Plus,
what if they actually said bois?
I mean, they kind of do, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, I know if this was my segment, I would be doing a whole thing about, like, if they're echolocating, why are they screaming so much? But yeah, that's sort of put to the side. But yeah, there's kind of some quibbles now as I go back and look at it. But there's so much else that I absolutely love about it that it sort of like overshadows it, and that just becomes nitpicky.
Is, I am surprised to hear you not bring up as an axe, given the floor to do so, the alternate endings.
Right. I didn't know if you wanted to save that for the ending.
Oh, I love the ending. It's so gutting.
Okay. Well, that's the thing, is I watched the American version of it because I think that the European version is far inferior.
What did I watch?
Okay. So the original version, cut, yeah, the American version,
yeah.
Sarah lives. She makes it out.
Oh, no.
To her car, and then like has a big freak out, like as the truck drives by, and that's it. But she survives.
But you don't cut back to the cave.
No. It never goes back to the cave.
Gotta cut back to the cave. European one,
they come back. And I knew as soon as I was up, like, oh, I know Tommy's going to be like, thank goodness they all died.
Or she stays down there and becomes one of these crawler things and lives a happy life and finds a new crawler daughter and husband.
During the ending credits, you can hear her practicing her bois. She's trying different.
No, guys, listen. They wait till they come around the corner, then you drop down from the ceiling and then scream in their face. I really think that and movies kind of like, I think, will tell you how they should end. And I feel like she earned it. She earned her survival. She earned her way out. Like, she fought to live. And if it's not, then it's just like the movie could have been 20 minutes long. They all get in the cave, the end. Like, I don't, if we're just watching women just one by one die and no one ever finds out, I don't know what story we're telling.
But she also commits crimes on her own.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm saying. She fought her way back to life. I mean, I'm not saying she's like a out and out hero. She's not, you know, Ripley or whatever, where she also is committing, you know, she's killing, but those are animals, so it doesn't matter. Like, she does legitimately sacrifice one of her friends, quote unquote friends, in order to make it out. So I'm not saying that she's like now like a paragon of virtue, but I feel like she fought her way out to, and like all the stuff she'd been through, she'd been the most likely to just like, oh, well, like just throw herself over the edge. Like, what do I have to live for? But like, she sort of had this transformation where she goes through all this stuff, fights her way out, does all this stuff to live, and then just to immediately die. I don't understand that. That movie, I don't understand.
I find this really interesting, and I'd like to present a case that you're wrong. So here's the thing. I actually think the European ending is much more gracious and kind than the American ending. I think allowing her to live is on some level sociopathic. She lives with the guilt of what she just went through, of the relationship with her friend, and of the baggage of having lost everybody. There is tremendous trauma. There is tremendous, like, that is a life not worth living at the end of the movie. So in many ways,
she's not coming back from it.
Right.
She's barely coming back from the loss of her family.
But that's what I like about it. Like, she is bearing the scars. She is not the same person. She has been transformed. She is traumatized. But like that's part of it. Like, she has gone through the crucible and come out the other side.
That's what happens to all the people that join Jigsaw and Saw. Yeah. All of Jigsaw's partners are people that went through the crucible, and you wouldn't say like they're living their best. They're not in the salad days.
If they make it out, yeah.
But they're making traps now. They've broken. Spoiler alert, all the people, the reason after Jigsaw dies is because all of his acolytes who went through, they're now taking over his mantle. So it's not a great picture of post-traumatic. We're getting off track.
But I think the other case I want to make is that this is a well-trod kind of trope. The idea of somebody finding happiness and resolution through going insane, right? They did it in Brazil and in The Thing. And like, this is a thing that happens. And she finds peace and is then torn asunder, right? She is reunited in her head with her daughter, and then we're left to imagine she is now a crawler. I think she's eaten, that's the reality of it. So that is like I find that to be a more sort of a kinder resolution for her character than her living. And that's what I think is so interesting, because that it's the European ending that was the original ending. The rest of the planet knows not of our savior of the Bronco.
So in the American version, right, it's a story then of her being so haunted by blaming herself for her death of her husband and daughter that she can't get rid of that. And the way that she does is by murdering one of the other cave dwellers and then essentially replacing this recurring nightmare of this guilt with actual guilt that she has, because she actually does kill Juno. Right, her friend there.
Out of rage. Juno is a...
and that's more betrayer. Agency. Yeah,
she's so
more
right. agency. Also, for your own guilt. Of herself. That's interesting. Yes.
Yeah. Also, it's revenge. I mean, it's not only the cuckolding, but it's also the fact that Juno killed one of their friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so she's taking revenge for that friend as well. So it is that you have that Punisher anti-hero morality of like, you killed, so therefore I will kill.
Yeah, thinking about the morality of this, so many people that I've talked to about this ending feel like Sarah is justified in what she does to Juno. And I've said, she murders Juno. I'm like, no, it's not that. Juno's killed by these crawler things and not by Sarah, right? But it's like, if you break someone's leg on the Titanic and jump into a lifeboat, right?
Yeah, that's getting more towards like the trolley problem.
Or to the nerdier side, the Batman thing of, I don't have to kill you, but I'm not going to save you.
Yes.
That's kind of the same thing. Choosing not to save you, then you're still killing them.
Right. If he goes through the top of the L train and doesn't take Ra's al Ghul with him, that's one thing. But if he ties Ra's al Ghul to a chair in it, that's a little bit different.
Right.
Exactly.
That's the ending. And as you can hear, for those who haven't seen both versions, please find both endings. They're on YouTube, and it's a really interesting comparison.
Yeah, the Blu-ray has both as well. The
Blu-ray has both. Yes, that's true. And so it is, Tom?
Well, I just don't feel that the movie ever believed in the American version, because her just sort of waking up and seeing an exit is so dreamlike. Like, I never believed that she was ever getting out. And so,
they do the lighting change on her face, and that was a real signal for me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else about the movie, and speaking specifically to our theme here, what else about the movie and the environment is particularly terrifying?
Can I say one other thing? I'm sorry. Yeah. Just to talk about the ending.
It was an emergency.
This is something that just occurred to me. Maybe we've already just sort of said it in other words, but it's almost like her mind is trying out the happy ending and takes it away from herself because she's still living in fear. She gets scared by the truck. She throws up. She sees her dead friend behind her. So it's almost like even if she did get out somehow, part of her knows she's done.
Yeah.
She has broken. And so maybe that's more allegiance to your point, Pete, of like maybe it is a kinder thing that even her daydream of escape fails her.
Well, I guess that's how I choose to see it. Either path is genuinely terrible.
Yeah.
But all of this is to say this is all character stuff. None of this is to talk about how horrible the setting is.
I saw this in, I was at Projections at a movie theater. So I saw this by myself, 6 a.m. On the day it came out. Just like everybody else, I'd seen the trailer and that was it.
Why are you seeing a movie at 6 a.m.?
Because you have to check the print. This is Weck Williams' print. You have to check the print to make sure that it's ready to go. So this, I had assembled it, I had built it, and then I had to make sure that there was no flaws in it.
Wow.
And so it's like, you know, it's one of the sort of the perks, but also it's also 6 a.m. and I got an 8-hour shift ahead of me after the movie's over. I was, so I was in the theater by myself watching this and nearly crawled out of the back of the theater because like it, this, so many of my fears, my hard-coded lizard brain phobias are in this movie that her crawling underneath that rock and then the water's right and then she can't get out and the rock says, oh, like even watching it, I had to, you know, just because of timing, I had to watch it like on my lunch hour and I had it on my phone and I was still like, the hairs of my arm were going up and I was like gripping the table. Like it's absolutely just goes right to primal fear for me. Like that, I've never had a movie like that quite the best. I've seen stuff that's like, oh yeah, it's like, you know, like, you know, John Carpenter says, like, you could scare anybody with 8 frames of white film, like, but you know, just black, all of a sudden white, and like you're the surprise. But like that, what Neil Marshall does in that scene, like, absolutely, like if he's not claustrophobic himself, then man, he got somebody who did, because that's exactly how you feel of like you can't go anywhere, you can't get out, and
he's tapping into something really primal.
Really, that I think really, really works more than I've seen any movie sort of do this similar thing this way.
Yeah,
right. And this moment where they discover that they're not in the cave system they were told they were in, and they're sort of lost there, that really works here. We have similar moments like that in The Ritual, where it's like, geez, what we thought we were doing here is not that. Like, we thought we were in a bunny run, right? We thought that this is taken care of, and that, yeah, we're struggling and we're doing all this stuff, but it's pretend. And now all of a sudden it's not pretend. You sort of just feel that in their guts, you know, discovering that, oh gosh, we're in a much worse situation than we thought.
Which I think, to both of your points, like the idea that this movie is set in a place that has already raised the bar of fear for me, right? That I'm already claustrophobic. I'm afraid of suffocating. I'm afraid of slippery rocks, you guys. Yeah. Like, that's just like gravity is also at work in this movie. And they've made it a social horror because all of these relationships, every one of the relationships is at stake. And they set that up, I think, very, very well, right? Like, I wouldn't want to be friends with any of these people. And I think they capture that in the character development of, like, how they treat each other after the events of the opening of the film, how they treat each other when they're going through trauma, when they're grieving. Yeah. They treat each other appreciably different. And I think that's another piece that works really well. Tom, are you going to say something?
Only that my favorite part of these kind of movies, well, it's very rare to find them in these kind of movies, but is the mythology. Both this and The Ritual are dripped in mythology. The mythology of this one, not as much dripped, but just based in the fact that when they find old spelunking equipment, that's when I remember being in the theater and being like, oh, this entire movie just had leveled up.
Yes.
This is trod territory. It's not going to go great because this has been unmapped. That's like a way of saying, no one ever says it, but they're like, wait, if all these people were here and there's paintings and stuff, how come it's not a known? It's a very cool, my favorite part in horror movies is never the jump scare. It's that slow creeping dread. Yeah. And that's what it is for me. So I like that a lot.
Yeah. At the same time, though, there is this mythology. There's this history of them being there. but we don't have this idea that they've gone and done something wrong, except for Pete's basic idea of they've gone someplace, right? Like, they don't go and, like, break a seal. It doesn't say, like, stay out here or anything like that. Or, and we right. break a seal, or right. we touch an amulet, or we're stealing artifacts. Mm-hmm. It's just that they picked the wrong cave. Right, which could happen to any of us, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit happening in all four of our movies. I think even Fall, I mean, they're climbing it, but they're climbing on a ladder, and they're using the tower for what is intended to, at least parts of it, right? It's not that they're going into these places and like, hey, we're gonna really get nature, right? We're gonna poke it in the eye, we're gonna find something to turn into a bioweapon or any of that. Right. It's just they went to the wrong place on the wrong day. Which is a super primal, especially for us, I think, as couch potatoes, who are like, I will always go to the right place on the right time, which is my bed and my couch. Right.
Yes, for sure. And I like how next door,
yeah,
the proverbial place you shouldn't go, it reminds me of especially the remake of The Hills Have Eyes, that just one wrong shortcut and you're in a place that has been forgotten by history, but is still filled with people that will do things to you that you don't want to be done.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think that's part of what's so great about all of these movies to some extent, and that they put these people in these places that are, you know, to my eye, fundamentally broken, not good for human. They put these people who are broken in their own way in these settings that are so challenging. And I think that's part of what's so interesting to me about their efforts to survive in spite of the environment.
Right.
It's what makes it interesting. So let's talk, you know what, I'm thinking, let's do this a little bit out of order. Let's move to the ritual because I feel like there are enough sort of crossover elements and see how that works. Again, David Bruckner, 2017. These are some college buds who are heading out to the woods. The setup of this is very, very similar to The Descent, right? We lose a friend, but we also lose a friend in a way where one of our principal characters witnesses the death of his friend and doesn't do anything about it because he is, for whatever reason, paralyzed by fear. It's a robbery gone wrong. He's not able to do anything. So the movie sets up that redemption, that sort of grief process, as one of masculinity having been tested, right? Metal having been tested. And that takes us to hey, let's do something brave. Let's go do this crazy hike in Sweden. Sweden, as we learned from last month's show, is a dangerous place.
Yeah.
Full of wonderful people, dangerous place.
That's right.
What do we think of the ritual? This was a first time watch for me. I had not seen it before. How did it hit you? Keenan, why don't you start? Do we have any axes to grind?
No, I don't think I have any axes to grind. I think that this is really well done. Yes, with the first 10 minutes, I'm like, okay, this is The Descent, but now it's totally gender swapped. It's five dudes instead of six women. And yeah, thinking about masculinity and how this is a group that likes to do these grand adventures, right? The opening scene is then like, where are we going to go on our next grand adventure? And then it turns out that their grand adventure is there because they are masculinity seekers, right? They want to go to Vegas or to go here and there and like prove what guys they are. And now they're in a place where they have to, put that to the metal, right?
Well, this was one of their dead friend's choice, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And it's a beautiful, beautiful location, which I think is key to all of these films. Like, we do spend a lot of time just looking at nature, looking at the space and being like, this is beautiful. Except .. Yeah, we're going to get off the beaten path and see something that is not that great, right? The male dynamic, I think, is super interesting because as they get off the track and become victims of this ritual, they kind of become feminized and kind of childized, if that's a word, right? They catch themselves like naked and worshiping things against their will and just being like emasculated over and over again.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we might find out, I mean, in these descriptions I'm reading, we find out that there's a monster whose name is Modir, but I think that's sort of a cheat because as we have these people talking about Modir, I don't know if I ever catch that word, but that apparently is Swedish for mother, is this monster at the end.
And it's a bastard of Loki.
Yes, it's a bastard of Loki.
Just to right out of the gate, the creature design is fantastic. Like, I think it is a really interesting looking creature of the forest. It feels of a place. This movie, like The Descent, I was already scared by the woods themselves. And the woods themselves don't have to be threatening, but the way this movie captures the uncertainty of direction, like that is again a primal fear, the fear of being lost. And I think that this movie captures it in maybe it's one of the best. Like it just gets me in that space before we even see the first deer that is, you know, strung up.
There's a moment when they do get lost later on, and Luke, the Rafe Spall character, is trying to explain to his friends, and he's like, no, when I was up on that ridge, that, oh gosh, looks a lot like where we are right now. And then you're even like, oh God, is that place this place? Like, where are we? Because we don't have any of the kind of landmarks that we would want to find here at all, right? They're using things that humans shouldn't navigate by, like whether birds are chirping. And somehow, like, birds chirping in this direction feels safe, but there's no reason for us to believe that whatsoever. Yeah, right. Or there's a path at one point. One of the characters is like, here's a path. Paths mean civilization. Well, path just means that something has been walking here.
I have that in my notes. A path means civilization. That's my favorite quote, my pull quote of the movie, because that does not mean it. It means a path means some other, because they do not find civilization. They find a civilization, but not in the way that that guy is talking about it. I was texting with Pete sideways. If anyone listened to the last episode, I'm glad that it belongs here better, but I was jealous about this movie for being in my episode about missed signs and signals. Yeah. There's so much of a different language happening here. And one of the things that they don't really do fully is because sometimes they don't remember, what is all of their nightmares? Every time it's nighttime, they get taken to another place. We're with Rafe. I don't remember his last name, but the actor Rafe.
Spall.
Rafe Spall. And he is reliving this convenience store in the jungle. My favorite transitions throughout the film. They're so simply, practically, and perfectly done. But he's reliving this whole thing, trying to find new understanding from it. What's his name is screaming his wife's name.
Gale.
One of the guys is praying to something, to the empty man-ish kind of statue in the attic. They're missing a little bit of that, like maybe if they all sat down like the cast of Lost needed to do and had a 10-minute conversation, they would sort of figure out what's at stake, but they don't. And that's one of the strengths of the movie, is they're not able to read the signs, all of the things on the trees, how things, you know, and then it turns out that a lot of it is because there's this whole other civilization, for lack of a better phrase, in the woods that is appeasing an ancient god.
Right. You know, in The Descent, it's like this is a group of women and they make decisions differently than a group of men. There doesn't need to be like a fight over leadership. Here in The Ritual, it's like, man, if one of them were to be the leader and to accept leadership and everyone to accept them as the leader, they would solve a lot of these problems. It seems like these are people who want to be led or to lead.
Yeah.
And I feel like Hatch, the character of Hatch, was the closest, and he's the first one really taken. It's almost like the movie or the characters realize that he is the one that, because we know we're given a sort of unreliable narrator in that we are there with him in his moment of absolute cowardice. He's blamed by certain other people, but we see him not stepping up, Rafe.
Right.
But Hatch seems to be like the one that will get them through, and then he's on a tree.
Well, Kyle, you've been quiet.
Sorry.
No, I've been quiet because you guys like this way more than I did.
axe is out. Okay.
Yeah, this is my issue. So I think, yeah.
Oh, that's right. We keep not agreeing to the axe grinding part.
It's our new segment. It's our new segment. We'll get there. Sitting over here just sharpening. I don't need to take an axe to this movie. It doesn't really deserve that much hate. I thought the beginning was really strong because I had seen it in The Descent, and I was like, okay, well, clearly, you know, all art is theft. Like you were also, you saw it, you were influenced by it. You're like, I want to do that, but with dudes. And I was like, okay, great. I'm also terrified of the woods and camping. So you had me on there, and it just lost me. Like it was sort of like I found the middle sort of 45 minutes of this almost interminable. Like I'm like, this is just a lot of guys yelling at each other and then staring at trees, and then yelling at each other and then staring at trees. Like, you don't really see anything really scary or monster, or like that there's someone really out there. It's just a lot of like quick cut to tree, and it's just a tree. And I know it's building tension and I know and all that stuff, but I'm like, I'm not scared of this at all. I'm like, I'm not even engaged. I'm not just like, okay, now more wandering, more yelling, more wandering, yelling. By the time they get to the Blair Witch sort of part, I'm like, okay, all right, there we go. Now we're getting into it. I give a big prop for actually having a monster. Like, it wasn't just like M. Night Shyamalan's The Village, where it's like, you know, it's a guy in a hat. Like, no, it's a literal monster. And so when it got to the point like, oh, there actually is a real monster. There's a supernatural element to it. There's a really weird thing. It's not just them, you know that they had gotten amoebas from the water that they had drunk or whatever, and they are just, you know, off into. But then this, here we go, Tommy, this will make you happy. He should have died. And this one, I feel like the opposite of The Descent. Like, no, he should have died. There's no reason that he should have lived. Like,
I had an extra grind of this movie. I don't quite understand the metaphor.
Yeah,
because he gets out into the light. The monster can't follow him. That can be about loss or grief and being able to put something behind him. But it's not. If not, you will kneel before the god. If not, it will hang you from the trees. Why me? Your pain is great. They are able to see the pain that's within him. But it's not 1,000% satisfying. I don't understand. I think I was more just sort of like, oh, and then looking around like I was alone in my apartment, but looking around and be like, I get it, but what do you think? Because I don't quite get the metaphor.
Like you're saying, the idea of like that he turns around and he's back in his worst memory all the time. That's so great. And having it integrated into it was so well. But then the plane never landed. Like, it never really got to the thing of like, and like what was the end of that thing? So it's just because he stood up to a thing he didn't stand up to before, because he doesn't really. He just sort of like, aha, I punch you in the face and I run. Like, it's not bravery.
I think it actually is about running. Yes, that's what I think it is that in this thing that's haunted him, he is afraid that he's upset that he hid. And everyone is telling him directly, like his friend Dom is saying, like, you should have done something there. But he froze instead. And by the end of it, Dom is telling him, like, the right thing for you to do is to leave and not be a hero. And so I think it actually is about him, like, wanting to leave the woods and be like, that's the right decision for me, is to not be here
feeling
anymore.
Okay, not to engage.
Not to try
to be the hero.
Yes.
It's interesting.
I don't know if that makes it more satisfying for me.
Just because it fits the puzzle doesn't make it satisfying.
Right. There is a second part of the sort of non-redemption story of this character, which is, why was he chosen? I don't think the movie landed that either, right? Mm-hmm. He's the one who ended up with the puncture just right. He's the one who was picked while his other friends were taken. And then he just lights the house on fire. So if there's and runs away, right? If there is any sort of, you know, magic to the idea of him having to stare down this monster and then still be able to run away, if that's a sign of bravery, I just don't know how compelling that part of it was to me for a movie that I largely really liked. And one of the points, Kyle, to yours, you didn't get a chance to sit in on our our only single movie episode of Sitting in the Dark, which was Tommy's review of Skinamarink. I got some Skinamarink vibes from this movie. Every time they cut to the trees, I found myself kind of entranced by watching for something to move.
Mind is making shadows and forms where there aren't any, because it
has. And I think that's a thing that the movie does really, really effectively.
Yeah.
And because it doesn't linger on them for 7 straight minutes at a clip, it actually does them largely better than Skinamarink.
Right. I was convinced each time that we look at one of these shots of the trees that there is something there that I'm not seeing.
Yes.
So I know I should have been smarter than it, Kyle, because it happens eight or nine times. Right. But it was like, oh gosh, where is it? And I'm looking and actually physically moving my head back and forth, like I can fix the parallax in the movie and see behind these trees.
Yes.
And there's nothing there. I went back and checked after I saw the movie. There is nothing there.
Right. I think there is one where there is one where the thing moves way in the distance.
Well, it's in the daytime part.
Yeah.
When he's looking through, you see a couple things. Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm not going to go back and look. That sounds horrifying.
I will say that for me, going along with Tommy's point from earlier, the scariest thing to me was sort of mythology thing where the church, when he goes into the church, another thing in there, and now this is my interpretation of it, that they don't really say that, but the idea is that like this creature, if you bow to it, if you serve it, gives you long life, but that also means you never die. So I got the impression that everyone in there were probably thousands of years, hundreds or maybe thousands of years old. They can never die.
No, those people that he starts to light on fire are like mummified.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. But they're still alive.
They're still alive. That's the pleasure of worship.
Yes.
Which
that's
is
the end.
Like, so much worse.
See, like oh, yes. Yeah, there's a pretty girl who was nice to you, but like, yeah, but eventually you end up in the church.
Right.
Yeah,
I found that was really like, interesting. More terrifying than almost anything else that they did in there. Just that idea of like, oh, yeah, like sure you can live forever, but you get to live forever. Not necessarily healthy.
No.
Right. Yeah. Right. All right. Well, I totally agree with you. That was super satisfying. And let's move this train along and talk about our third film, 2016's The Shallows. Blake Lively goes surfing, finds a rock.
Here is a time to bring up one thing, which is all four of these films, if you're able to sort of blur your eyes a little bit, all four of these films are centered around some kind of a reunion.
Yes.
With The Shallows being Shallows is going back to the place to visit her dead mom's beach. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Why are all four of these films about a reunion? We already talked about loss and grief. I want to bring up at some point the idea that two of the female movies perseverate on infidelity, as if maybe that is some sort of a real horror for a certain type of moviegoer. But maybe there's nothing interesting to say about it other than the fact that I noticed that it's always a reunion. It's always a either grouping back together from a long time apart or a going back to. Is the
plan all along?
Is the point that's how you normally deal with loss or regret is you have to go back? Almost like going back to the scene of the crime, either the emotional crime that was put on you, the people you were with when that crime happened, or the place that your regret came from. I obviously haven't thought this out. I thought if I put enough words together,
they're all in new places though. So they're not like going back.
But well, they're coming back.
But in a way they're coming back to time, sometimes with each other.
That or you trying can go, to recreate something.
Yeah, you can go to a new location, but if you're coming back with the same people you were with at the old location or visiting someone that you lost at an old location, I still think that can be a type of reunion.
I do too. And I think so much of this is you know, an expression of exposure therapy, right? Like this is, we're going to go through this thing together as a way to process that past experience that was... That was troublesome.
It's like a reconciliation over all of these characters.
Exactly. And even in the case of The Descent, where it's not the same, even the same sport, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter because I think you're onto something, Tom, that it turns out it's the locus of authority for the emotional processing is the people together. Not necessarily the location or the activity or anything like that.
The location puts it into extremis.
Yes.
Which lets the human people deal with the human problems.
Right.
Takes them out of their element because maybe it's just too easy to hide. I mean, The Fall, we haven't gotten to The Fall yet. She is a recluse. She cannot deal with her life at all, and she is dragged into a place which puts her into extremis, and then A, leads to revelations, B, leads to maybe redemption of something. I got too excited by the start of my sentence, but you know where I was going.
Right, but in grief, right, the loss that they have, this might sound to you like psychological culture studies for everybody, but like the loss that they have makes them feel incomplete in the whole. And so then they separate themselves by going out into isolation to expose themselves mm-hmm. to that in order to return back to the whole, which happens to all of them, right? Through this exposure therapy, but it's also this separation therapy. Like, who am I when I'm not in society?
Sure.
Yeah.
Look at that. Yeah. Tommy, you set it up. This is what a team is all about.
I know. I wish I knew any terms from volleyball. Because I was the second guy.
There's a bump. It was the bump.
Fascinating. So, you know, that gets us, we're talking about the Shallows.
Sorry.
She is going back to her mom's beach. There are, in the spirit of axes to grind, I will briefly state my case. One, this movie calls its shots more than the prior two, in my view. This movie is hanging its lanterns all on every branch along the beach.
What, you mean Chekhov's fire coral?
yeah, that. And so that was just, there are pieces to this movie that in the beginning and end that are so super saccharine that it was that I found myself frustrated by the presentation of it. Chekhov's "What's the name of this beach?" silence. there are all kinds of those little moments, and so I struggled with that on this movie, and I still think the middle meat of this movie, to Tom's point earlier on, this movie is a horror show of deprivation, and the ticking clock of tide works extremely well for me. And so in spite of the grievances that I have in the beginning and the end of this movie, I think the meat of the story works as a good, solid, again, primal fear piece. The environment says, don't go into the water. Mm-hmm. We've learned this so much over the years. Please don't go to the water. We are air breathers. And she does it, and she pays. And then she goes again. She learns nothing.
Right. She didn't need a bigger boat. She needed a boat. She needed a boat. Any boat.
Do we have any other axes on the Shallows?
As a sort of like a movie quibble thing, it's like, wow, this beach has everything. I mean, like, you got sharks, you got whales, you got dolphins, you got jellyfish. I mean, like, it's like, wow, that's a lot in a very small area. But okay, like, I understand the idea of
like, if it's zoomed out and it's actually at a Sea World.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you could not have planned this better in terms of all of the things.
That's a great point. I didn't even think about that. Like, it's everything.
Like, okay, but you know, I understand a movie has to happen. And
sure. But it's so ecologically diverse because white right. people know where it is. Yeah. So they can't destroy the environment.
Right. If they did Shallows 2, you know there would be a house that's already built right, on there exactly. by a tech right. billionaire. My main complaint with I think this movie is terrific. My only complaint at the start of it is, I'm going to say a really controversial thing now that's going to put us on the map. I'm going to blow up the other thing because I have a statement to say, and that is that Blake Lively is pretty. That's right. Come at me, internet. I said it. I'll stand by it.
But he takes his headphones off.
That being said, I really am annoyed at how they shoot her in the start of this movie. It got to the point where like I'm like, oh wow, that's a pretty lady. And then the further it going along of like running the camera along her legs or her stomach, I'm like, this is pervy. Like, it got to a point where I was like, I am uncomfortable with the way that you are shooting this woman. Like, please stop. I mean, I think by the time you get to the actual like the meat of the movie and the suffering and like and you know, and she gets to have all these wounds and stuff too, that sort of goes away. And so maybe it was intentional, but I was really uncomfortable in the first in the surfing stuff where they're just like doing everything they can to like show every single possible pleasing feature on this actress.
I think they wanted to show that the shark wasn't hungry. The shark was
thirsty.
Made me feel like Jaws. All right.
I agree.
That felt old schooly.
Yes.
Like a type of filming
like
that we yes. haven't done yes, for like, a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The slow zip cleavage shot.
Yes.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kanan,
that's axes. Nothing against Blake. That's specifically.
I have no axes with this movie. I think this is an excellent movie that I'm glad I finally saw. Because it is preposterous.
Yeah,
but I don't mean that as a bad thing.
Yeah,
it is so bonkers. Like, yeah. So not only is there a whale, but that is our our floating island of refuge for a while, in a way that I've never thought a whale could be. But I think Blake Lively is so good in it,
yes,
that we totally believe that, yes, that's what she would do. And to perform sutures on herself using her jewelry and this stuff, yeah, that is bonkers crazy. Yes. And certainly the way, I don't know how much you spoil these things, but like certainly the way in which we get rid of this shark finally, which is crazier than in Deep Blue Sea, which is a comedy, yeah, you know?
Yeah. Right.
But she's just so good that you just follow her with all of this stuff. I think it's one of the great horror performances in quite some time.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
I agree with that entirely. I love her narration.
Yeah.
I think that is one of the things that makes it. I we're going to talk about The Fall, and I think that you can barely see that these are of a piece. Like, mm-hmm, basically, right? The people made The Fall, saw The Shallows, and like, ooh, I like that. I'm going to take some of that.
What if we went up instead?
Yeah, but yeah, her narration of like talking to herself as if she's the patient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like so great because you get a chance to get into her head and see her competency and see it, like even a little bit of her sense of humor. And talking to the bird and all that kind of stuff. I think it's a lot, as opposed to we've seen kind of the other ones where there's a lot of just like staring off into the distance. Like,
yeah.
Just sort of like without having it like, I knew at that point that I needed to get out of the, you know.
Yeah.
Like, but it's still a way you're still with her.
From a production standpoint, Hami Colet-Serra was saying that there was a lot more of her talking to herself, both in the script and then in the original cut of the movie, and they gradually whittled those things down.
Okay.
That's always like this question you have when you're making a movie, like how much does it need to be absolutely clear? And then like, could Blake Lively have gotten that performance without all this extra lines that they've given her? You know, she's a great actor, so maybe, right? But this idea of like, she's, yeah, talking to Steven Seagal, my new favorite horror character, her little buddy there, and like explaining every single little thing. And then they find a visual language instead.
Yeah.
But I like what's left there, right? It's interesting.
Yes.
It doesn't feel like exhibition. It feels like just her losing her mind out there,
yeah,
on this rock.
I completely agree. Yeah, mm-hmm, both Fall and Shallows, they have to deal with the idea of how do you make it cinematic with just one person in a place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fall, we will get to, obviously, but she talks to... And it worked for me, the idea of her, that she was in medical school, she had dropped out and was screwing on, so she treats her, she talks to herself as a patient.
Mm-hmm.
That's very elegant. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I think that worked really, really well. And you know, once I'm in the movie, this is one of those movies. I love that you use the word preposterous, because the final sort of denouement of our shark friend, mm-hmm, is preposterous in a way that was equal parts dumb and satisfying.
Yeah.
Like there's just a lot of physics that, like fluid dynamics, it just, mm-hmm, doesn't feel like it would work, and it makes the shark stupid.
Right.
And I feel like by the time I got there, I was kind of in it.
Right.
It's a different movie for about a 90-second stretch than the rest of the movie. You know what I mean?
It channels Jaws 4 when you harpoon, uh-huh, you penetrate a shark that jumps out of the water with a boat front. It's like, you got me!
Right. I didn't look to see if there was a Mythbusters episode about this particular shark kill.
Yeah, but still, in terms of world building, I think the movie works very, very effectively, mm-hmm, because it has me by that point.
Yeah.
It has me, you know, hook, line, and sinker.
Hey!
So it's scary. Water's scary. Don't do it.
Yeah.
How about
also air? Wait. Also, yeah, we need to mention daddy issues, because that'll be important as we move into our next film.
Yes, daddy issues, very important. They reconcile. It's nice. Mm-hmm. I imagine for you, Kyle, Shallows was probably the best of them because
I love to say
everybody lives.
But I saw Shallows when it really
nobody
came
lives.
Out.
One person lives.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people die.
That's true. A lot of people die.
I do like the fact that like we'll come and help you, and she's going, no, don't come.
And then
and help
Shark
me.
Week happens. It was great.
I thought Shallows is just that. It's just that side of horror. Like you just cross over that sort of Jaws line where it's like it just becomes an entertaining thing as opposed to a grueling survival tale. It's not open water.
Right. Very different.
It's so smart, Shallows, because it understands that we've seen Jaws.
Yes.
Like Jaws has to, because it's Jaws, has to explain to us like this particular shark is acting unnatural and who knows why that is. And we don't have time to talk about this, Chief. We have to do other things. And this one, we just sort of assume this is a Jaws, right? This shark is a Jaws. Yeah. we don't have to like think about that. It's not, again, she isn't, she didn't kick over a shark's understand nest or something something wrong or anything. It's just that she's on this beach the one day a shark goes crazy.
Yeah. That's right.
And you know, speaking to the SeaWorld criticism, like that, there is something about that's sort of a sweet bit of kismet that there happens to be the whale, which of course would bring a shark.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Like that's a logical piece that fits for me completely. I didn't have any questions about that.
No. Mm-hmm. It's whales just happen. More things you stack onto it.
Yes.
Where it's just like, and now jellyfish. Okay.
And now, shall we, speaking of segues, shall we talk about the fall? Mm-hmm. Or just fall.
Just fall.
Just fall. 2022.
Or as I like Scott to call Tetanus, the movie.
I like to talk fall.
Oh my goodness, this movie. So shall we begin with axes to grind? Mm-hmm. Would anybody like to go first?
Rough green screen of the boyfriend hanging from the cliff in the cold open.
Yeah.
When he's swinging back and forth, I was like, couldn't what? Those were the three. I was asking all the reporters questions. That was so poorly done when so much of this movie, I think, effects-wise, is done really well. So that was a little tough. I saw this movie in the theater when it came out, like a real me. and I think, I don't know why, but I just had like some detective things on. There's just no reason to ever show a picture of someone with someone else's hand around their shoulder. And someone say, who's that? It goes, no one. Well, there's a paucity of characters in this movie. Yeah. It's obviously. Uh-huh. So you can see all the tricks coming pretty quickly. That being said, I did not see the biggest twist coming in the theater. So go ahead. And double strap your backpack. Double strap your backpack. Yeah. I'm so sorry to scream, Keenan. No. I forgot. No. I just looked down in my notes and it's underlined and bolded. Yeah. You always double strap, baby. What are you doing?
Every time.
Double strap. Tie it, wrap it around your neck.
Yeah, there's a clip. Just clip it.
Yeah. Even if something has already happened to that person where they can't double strap their backpack.
But it happened before that.
Oh, it happened
before that. There was never enough double strapping. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
This, the first act of this movie is really rough. It is for me, it's very backwards because we have our main character, Becky, who her friend is telling her, you've got to go climb something to get over your husband's death from climbing, which that's just so difficult. I don't know how people mediate that in their heads to make this make sense at all.
Right. Isn't it just sort of like a get back on the horse kind of an idea?
But as she's like, if she were half on the horse and she's crying and her friend is like, get on the horse. Like it feels so backwards to me. Like,
okay.
As opposed to like the main character saying like, hey, I need to get on this horse. And the friend being like, I don't think you're ready. I need to help you with this.
Oh, interesting.
Like, it feels so traumatic in this first act.
Bullying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It feels like this is not people I want to follow. The movie is so strong though in the center that when we finally do get into act two and they're doing it, like I would follow these people, right? I just sort of have to, I guess for me, mediate and separate myself and say like those characters in the first act are not these people, because those characters in the first act and like, oh man, I don't want to, you know, root for them or see them. I think they've made some really silly mistakes here, right? Mm. But once they're up on this tower, it's gripping. It's very, very effective.
I wholeheartedly agree. Actually, I found a clip. Someone was actually talking about the 2018 Tomb Raider movie, which was directly influenced by The Descent. There actually is almost like a recreation of the first scene, like as we're talking about survival. But they were talking, and so they, this is Ashley Lynch on what's now called X, but we all know is Twitter. It says, there's got to be a name for how movies are pants-shittingly terrified to start movies, especially adaptations, where they are supposed to begin, and instead waste all this time, sometimes entire movies, just to get us to the movie we came to watch. And I thought that same thing exactly like this. It's like, we know where we're going. Can we just please get there? Because when they get there, I think it's great. My only axe to grind is actually with my 16-year-old daughter, who when I said, oh, I'm going to watch Fall as part of this thing, she's like, oh, that's the movie where the one girl dies and then she remembers that her...
Oh, no!
I'm up there on the platform with her. And no. I was like, cool. Well, I'm going to go watch that now. And so, like, the whole time through, I was doing an M. Night Shyamalan thing of like, okay, who actually died? And like, right. The husband, like, maybe like the... Maybe it's the friend who died and the husband is actually alive and they broke up because they like, do they ever say he actually dies? I'm like, oh, no, there's ashes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, her friend's a ghost the whole time. It's just in her head. And they go to the restaurant and they talk to the friend. I was like, but.
So you're having a whole other conversation.
Right. Exactly. I was at a whole different place with this movie. And then when they finally got to like on the tower thing, I was on board, but I was playing this game of like, and then when it finally happens, I'm like, oh man, it only happens like the last 10 minutes of the movie. Dang it. Yeah. Like wasted all this time looking for the twist.
There, you guys, I'm really surprised. I'm with you on the double strap thing. Rough. Tetanus. Rough. So much barefoot climbing of rusty structures. The thing that bothered me really the most, and the thing that I'm not kidding took me out of the movie, is the way this movie handles technology. The battery life on these phones, 3 days on the top of this tower is nonsense. There's so much nonsense that them being climbers and not tying themselves off to the top of this stupid tower at all ever is ridiculous. Like there's so many things that they like the opening sequence when Becky jumps into her husband's arms on a sheer cliff face, like Hunter wraps her flannel around her waist while technically free climbing. Like there's just so much stuff that didn't allow me to get into the movie. So I largely, I reserved all my sharpened axes for this movie. I thought it was performed weird. No. I did not care for it at all until I came back after watching it with some friends and we had good laughs. And then I put on my VR headset. And I watched the middle part again, and it is extraordinary. Like the experience of being that far into the universe of this tower, I think was really effectively done. And by and large, the effects work great. And once I get over my high horse of not being able to get into this movie, I think it actually delivers on the things that it needed to deliver on. Yeah. It had me on the edge of my seat every time gravity drops out from under us. Right?
If you can imagine seeing that in the theater, when you have nowhere else to look and it's loud as anything, because the sound design in this movie is brilliant. Yes. There's nothing you would think like, well, the big problem, it's going to be such an easy movie. But towers like that make noise all the time. They're just really weird alien noises. Yeah. And so I used to watch the entire movie like,
exhilarating.
I watched the last 45 minutes of it on my iPad with my headphones on next to my wife as she was reading her Kindle. And she would multiple times go, are you okay? Gripping the bed. I mean, like, they're like, once again, you know, as we're going down the litany of fears, like falling, like heights. Yeah, not crazy about heights. And not like, crazy this about heights. Really got into that a bunch of times where I was like, multiple times to do it. And I can't imagine what you went through, Tommy, because I'm just watching on the small screen.
Yeah, it was thrilling.
And like, Yeah, this was so much better than I thought it was going to be. I really thought this was going to be a really, really cheesy, like low budget kind of thing, but it's gorgeous and it's scary in terms of the thing. I mean, like, yeah, there are some like, you know, logical fallacies and flaws and stuff too, but like, I it was so much better and so much scarier than I thought it was going to be.
Well, and the big, there were a couple of just interesting sort of gore twists that had me, you know, first using her own gangrene to lure a vulture and then kill it and eat it with her bare hands. Like, that was great. But the use of shoes at the end, that effect, when she is able to get down to see her friend's hollowed out abdomen and jams her phone in a Converse All-Star and jams her the chuck into the hollowed out abdomen and pushes her friend off the thing. Well, I stood up in the room where we were. I could not stay seated in the room where we were watching. It got me.
It invites you to problem solve with them.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Because you're like, what else is in there? You know, like a video game, like having an inventory. It's like, what can we possibly do here? And then you're like screaming in your head or maybe out loud in the movie theater, like, don't do it that way. You know, retie this a different way. Go get one more foot down there.
The sort of dumb choice of them going up there. After that, they were not dumb.
Right.
Because there's so many of these horror movies are predicated on people being absolute idiots.
Right.
And in this, you're right. Like, you're sort of with them in terms of like, oh, that's really good. Oh, that I hadn't thought about that. Oh, yeah. Like, what else could you do? And the fact that the Chekhov's gun of like everything that they showed them bringing, they ended up using in some way, shape, or form, right down to the shoes.
Yeah, I love that conversation about inventory. I think this movie does that better than many.
Right.
Tom, sorry.
Another really good example of this kind of idea is, and another movie that has a really elegant way of dealing with one person alone in a room, is Mike Flanagan's Gerald's Game. You're handcuffed to a bed, you're only able to reach these three things. How do you not die? Well, you make this magazine thing into a straw and stuff. It's smart. I love giving people a normal amount of things and then being really smart about it, about how to use every single part of it.
Right. I don't think they're cheating necessarily either. Like in The Ritual, there's kind of a cheat where Rafe's ball is tied up and then he like breaks his own thumb by thinking about it, right? Which we totally, as we watch it, like, oh, I totally accept that. Like, I totally get that that's how he did that, right? But that's sort of a movie cheat here. Sure. I think in this one, I don't catch them cheating. Maybe Pete does catch them cheating, but it all feels within the rules of the game.
It's the batteries, man. 3 days in, and they actually show you the screen on her phone, Becky's phone, and it's 3/4 charge, and they've been using it all day and all night, and I can't abide.
But there's no Wi-Fi up there.
That means the antennas are firing all the time looking for signal.
When you charge your phone on a diner light bulb, that's like a supercharge.
Yeah. So, and don't forget the utility light bulb at the top, man. That drone is supercharged. So I get it. This is the other side of this movie that I think is actually interesting, though. Like, anybody have any commentary on the horrors of social media? Right? That, like, that's in this movie, right? That so much of the motivation for this second climb is duplicitous on Hunter's part. It is both, I'm going to use you and your grief as an excuse, but also I'm a you know, an influencer now, and I gotta be, you know, crazy D or whatever. And I hope you all came up with your own nicknames after this movie.
So, mine, I just went with Crazy D. Is that going to be a problem? I liked that. I liked that she was like an extreme sports YouTuber. It helped, I thought, elegantly explain a lot of things. And I also liked that the idea of how preposterous it is, to use a phrase, to go up there, quote, if I let you go back down, then fear wins, and I'm not going to let that happen. All of these things was enough to make me go, I'm going to be okay with suspending disbelief and you going up this stupid tower. One of the other things that I said on Coda is that this and The Shallows has in common is overconfidence in very forgotten infrastructure.
Yeah.
Like, just because this was a ladder at one point or this was a buoy at one point doesn't mean it is still that function. I'm sorry, Kyle, what did you say?
Don't trust men is the...
Yeah, that's another... That's speaking of old infrastructure.
That's what it comes down to.
Well, and isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting that on the one of the tricks that this movie pulls is I didn't count, but there are I'll just use the number innumerable cuts to shaky bolts, like bolts that are rusty but not to the ladder. They're just breaking and snapping, and not once I don't think there's a single time where they let the girls see that. Mm-hmm. And there are so many of them. So, like, I think that's one of the things that the movie does really well once you're on the ladder with them is that it starts setting up how preposterously shaky this entire endeavor is very early on
in
the movie. And it does have a sign that says, you know, I can't remember what this sign actually says, but this sign does say you could die. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a sign that says death is possible here. Something
I think
like
it
that.
Said TV tower not to be used for redemption and or
grief.
Processing.
Your father. Yeah.
And it also under it said, don't trust people in campers. And I was like, why? I got it. I figured that out.
Highlight moment. Yeah. Highlight moment.
Well, the bolts are Hitchcock's bomb, right?
Yes.
Right. Like it's like we know it, but they don't know it. And then going, what are you doing? The bolts are going. Why would you keep climbing?
Yeah, that collapse of this ladder system, it turns out, it's not just like one ladder. It's this whole interconnected infrastructure of its own. That collapse is jaw-dropping. Yeah. So that's when the movie just works. You're like, oh, okay, I'm done. Yeah. All these questions I have about character and motivation and all that. This is great. I'm with
the
this.
The fear movie. Took over.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really like both actresses. I especially like the lead actress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought she was really gripping and sad and great.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is the cheapest of all of our movies. And I think it, you know, I know you're saying like, oh, one or two of these shots don't look very good. But I think they really pull off really well. A combination. They were saying like, for 10% of all the shots in the tower are on location and 90% are on a green screen or something like that.
Then why was the opening so bad? Because they do so good. Once they're on the tower, I am sold.
Yeah.
There's also a nice economy and restraint of the filming. The Shallows wants to show how alone she is with a Peter Jackson like circular eagle shot, which I've never cared for. This is really just these drone, like, I guess now it's not drone if they were green screened, but these push-ins and push-outs. You're on their level. It's almost like saying there is no where but here. It's like, why film the ocean if you're stuck on an island? So they just have you in that part of the tower. I thought that was a really elegant way to do it. And apparently I get paid by the word elegant. I just realized that's the ninth time I've said it.
Well, I think to your point, it's absolutely great. It almost felt to me like they were trying to reset the floor in a very disconcerting way.
Right.
Once the girls are up there, they're trapped in this circle and they can't walk outside of it.
Yeah.
But because the camera, when it's on them, doesn't drop below that, like we get those, you know, crazy up angles, but generally when we're showing place, it feels like we're in just an impossibly large room,
right?
And they just can't leave this center spot, which I think was super effective.
Mm-hmm.
I found the pullaways in particular enormously unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
They were really got that particular juice just bubbling,
and the truck hitting the drone. Didn't see that coming. That was outstanding.
Didn't see that coming.
Well, Pete, and what a success. So, the one that you thought was the big loser, we all really enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
You're like the perfect host. This is my new voice now.
This was, I have to say, this was great fun and a little bit redeeming after the last set of movies I did that had some, questionable titles. And so I'm really glad that you guys trucked with these movies.
Yeah.
And I really like the idea of exploring the horrors of the environment in sort of partnership with the horrors of the actual horror. And I think these movies are a great set of those movies. So thank you for hanging out and being a part of that and watching these movies. And Keenan, welcome again. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you're here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Keenan, it is an honor and a pleasure, and you're already bringing too much, and I'm angry at you.
Oh, yeah. Good.
I feel like my ability to try to sound smart has been diminished yet again, and we'll see how it goes from here.
No, thank you for having me. Yeah, and I'm going to meet you at that TV tower a couple weeks from now. We're going to climb to the top of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be a treat.
Oh, once I lure Keenan into a cave. Oh. Yeah.
So Kyle and I are going to start the search for two new hosts.
Yeah. That's right. Great. That's right. After we do a quick little surfing vacation, I found this really great spot. Nobody knows about it. You're going to love it. It has everything.
Oh, my God. You know what's funny is I actually tried to get my wife to watch some of these movies with me, and she said, wait, tell me about the environments again. And I said, well, there's the TV tower, and then there's woods, water, and caves. And she said, I'm not watching any of those because I like those places.
She wants to continue liking them.
She wants to continue liking them. Why would I want a movie to ruin that?
What a weird way to live your life.
Liking things.
As someone that loves horror movies.
Yeah.
The Descent may be my wife's favorite horror movie, and she has never seen it. Because after I saw it, I was so impressed, I described to her like the entire plot from beginning to end, and she's like, that sounds amazing. Oh, that's that. And I was like, yeah, let's watch it. She's like, not a chance. Like, she doesn't watch anything scary at all. But she still holds The Descent in high regard.
That's fantastic. Well, this actually leads us to our coming attraction segment, and I am thrilled to say that the next month's pitch goes to our new host, Keenan.
Is there a tease?
Hey, you mean the new guy's got an idea? Hey, check out the big brains on new guy.
Hey. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to take a look at an idea that I've been working on. I'm teaching over the summer at UNLV Film a class on disaster and survival movies, sort of as a paired set of genres. Yeah. Cool. So I thought we would look at survival horror, which you might know from its video game roots. It's named in 1996 based on Resident Evil, the Japanese horror film.
Right.
Horror game, rather.
Right. Walk video slow, game. Never enough ammo.
That's right. Right. Don't use your ammo, and you wear the same costume the entire time.
Yeah.
Right. You're right. So I'm going to argue in my class and hopefully on the podcast next month that idea that we call survival horror has existed in horror films, in American films, for decades before the advent of survival horror in Japanese video games. So we'll be taking a look at some of those.
Very much looking forward to that. Yes. As usual, as soon as Keenan gives us our curriculum, I'll post a Letterboxd list with those movies so you can track along. And don't forget, if you haven't watched these movies, there's a Letterboxd list for the You Don't Belong Here series in the show notes. Check it out. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thanks for your time and your attention. If you want longer episodes, ad-free episodes, head over to thenextreel.com/membership and subscribe. We'd love to have you in the community and watching along in the live stream if you are so available. On behalf of Tommy and Kyle and Keenan, I'm Pete Wright, and we'll see you right back here next month sitting in the dark.
I love the conversations that so many of our hosts have had on their shows. Steve and JJ on Trailer Rewind, Ray and Ocean on Silver Linings, even Tommy's short-lived No, No, Wait, Hear Me Out.
And so many films they've discussed started out as a book, a play, or even a TV series.
Well, now you can support our whole family of podcasts by using our new Originals page to buy the original source material used to inspire films covered on our shows.
Just visit thenextreel.com/originals. Your purchases made through our links give us a small commission at no extra cost to you and allow us to keep having these fantastic conversations.
It's a wonderful way to support the show. Producing these podcasts week after week require a ton of work behind the scenes. If you'd like to help support our efforts, try using our Originals page when shopping for books and movies that we've covered.
It's your one-stop shop for Amazon and Apple links where you can buy the book, play, video game, movie, etc., upon which the movie is based.
Original material for Trailer Rewind movies like If Beale Street Could Talk,
The Goldfinch,
Aniara,
or The Two Faces of January,
or Silver Linings movies like Repo Men, which was based on The Repossession Mambo.
Plus, by using those links to buy books, Amazon and Apple show us a little bit of love, which allows you to support our family of shows with minimal effort.
Visit thenextreel.com/originals. It's a fantastic way to support the show and find a great book to read.
That's right. Head over to thenextreel.com/originals to find your next read and get started today.